I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to another Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on This Week with Pistol, and we are back again powered by Code Sports. Now, if we thought round one was difficult, round two was probably, well, it's equally as difficult, unfortunately, for me. But I've got a guest to talk it through with us all this week. How are you, Pig?
Hey, Pistol. Good to joining you again on a Monday night. Yeah, going pretty well. You and I had a little catch up at the SCG at halftime, the Bombers versus Swans game. We both went to that one live.
unfortunately for you, yes.
I'm a Bombers fan and we didn't get the win, but it was actually a lot more competitive. I thought it was going to be more brutal than that. So, you know, it was still a competitive game and fun and, yeah, still good atmosphere at the SCG every time.
It was such a high scoring game. Yeah. It was like it was just a lot of fun. It was a big party, and as a neutral supporter, it was very good. And look, the Bombers played quite well. I'm not going to take anything away from them. Better than I expected. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, look, to the important, very important topic. How did you go this week?
I got a 19.36 this week, which was a bit of a drop. I think I lost rank this week, so. Sitting at 37,000 for the year, but I feel like there's going to be like 100 points between 37 and, I don't know, a lot less than that. So I'm not too worried about rank. I'm just like using these first 2 weeks of corrective trades to get the right rookies and get the right premiums and then try and catapult up, I think. But 19.36, a bit disappointed. I didn't really have any of those kind of like Jackson's kind of guys that went off crazy. So felt a little bit left behind, but they could easily have a 90 next week. And I don't know, someone I have like a Rosie could go huge. Who knows? But what about you?
Yeah, I think someone in Slack pointed out, and apologies, I don't remember who it was, that I think it was 300 points separated like 5K and 50K.
Oh, right.
So it's all really tight. And with the best 18, it's going to remain really tight. It's hard to make big gains throughout this period. Unfortunately for me, I didn't have another great week. 19.27, it was actually not a bad week for myself. I just had some self-inflicted pain. I captained Jordan Dawson for a 96, which was quite miserable. He had 131 Dream Team. He top-scored Dream Team this week and still only scored 96. So there's some logic, I guess, in captaining the highest scoring Dream Team player, but not paying off in Supercoach. But you're right, not having Butters or Jackson or Sarong or Tom Green or anyone that went absolutely massive this week, it really hurts in the best 18 because I didn't actually have that many bad scores. I had some 60s drop out of my best 18, but not having the ceiling guys just meant that I couldn't quite crack that 2K mark. But I was able to move up in ranks, which is a sad statement at that. I am into a fair 78K. Come a long way back, but at this, if my maths are correct, Pig, in approximately 11 weeks, I will be first.
Well, there you go. That's how we're going to look at it.
Just give me some time. Yeah. It's a slow, slow, very, very slow ramp. It's a
24-week marathon.
Yeah. Look, it wasn't great. I had to boost last week. I boosted McKercher in and Sheasel for Young. And I'm boosting again this week just to get the team back on track, which is not the way I wanted to start the season, but desperate times, desperate measures. I'm getting in the guys that I probably should have started or want to start or that are looking quite hot, which we can talk about a bit later in the podcast. But before we get into that, I just want to give a quick shout out to some of the patrons that have signed up this week. There's just a couple of them, so it won't be long, but thank you very much to Adam Weston, Kevin, Matt Howard, and Jaden Camilera. Thank you very much for being part of our community. It's a great time to get involved right at the beginning of the season. Slack is going full steam ahead at the moment. How have you found jumping into Slack, Pig? You've only jumped in the off season. How's it been going for you?
Oh, I've really enjoyed it. It's just a great community to kind of be a part of and be able to chat Supercoach or like float your ideas with people or see what everyone's thinking. I didn't go on it for about 6 hours today. I was off doing other stuff and then I come on and there's like thousands of messages. I think like everyone's just kind of on a Supercoach high at the moment with it starting. But look, yeah, I'm really enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of some of these online communities. You can make some really good friends just from literally kind of having shared interests online, and it seems absolutely like one of those places. So I'm loving it.
Awesome. No, well, there we go. So, there's some unbiased feedback for everybody. and quickly before we get into it as well, the Cancer Council, we have our first donation of the season. So a very big thank you to Butler, who has donated and said, I've donated the sum of Max King and Max Gorn's jumper numbers. If you know, you know. And Butler, I have no idea what you're talking about at all.
I don't know,
I don't know. But very much what I do know is that thank you very much for your donation to the Cancer Council. We're just shy of that 29,000 mark, and it would be awesome to get to 30K this season. But, you know, we're not really the donate for donuts is probably not going to. It's not going to come.
I hope you don't get
bear any fruits in that best 18 weeks.
I hope you don't get a donut in best 18 week. Also, we've got a Dr. Supercoach Keeper League going where with a few of the guys from Slack, where we've now instilled some weekly fines for things like if your captain doesn't get a ton, or if you've got a 100 player on the bench and someone less than 100 on the field. So, I'm going to start tallying those up, and there'll be Cancer Council donations throughout the year as well.
Perfect. That sounds fantastic. Alrighty. Pig, we've got some big moves to talk about.
Yep.
I'm gonna put you on the spot. I'm gonna ask for your instant thoughts behind these players. I'm sure some of them you've already thought about. Others maybe not, because they might not be in your team, but they're almost exclusively in my side, which is why I've had such a bad start. But let's get the ball rolling. With Hayden Young, keep or hold, and where would you go to if you were to trade?
Well, keep and hold, I think, are the same thing. So do you mean trade or...
Sorry. I might. Maybe that was where my intention lies, but we'll wait to hear what you think.
Yeah, Hayden Young can go, I think. It looked like he still had the role in the CBAs that we kind of wanted, but, you know, he's put two bad scores out now. He's going to drop cash pretty quick. He also, like we talked about last week, I think his ceiling is kind of, or his nearly best case is kind of that 105, 10 to 107, only just being a defender keeper kind of thing. So if that's kind of his best case, like what are you really holding on for, especially if he's going to drop in price? I think he's one that can pretty easily be ditched. If you watched it and you still liked him, I guess you could hold, but he is going to drop cash. And there's some good options. Like he's around the same price as Harry Sheezel. If you don't have him, that's one of the easiest switches. I'm a big Dan Houston fan, so you could do that. Luke Ryan's going off. If you can find a bit of money, you could do that. There are some people that might have Dacos in the midfield, which kind of opens you up to a lot of other avenues as well.
We'll get to that later.
You could go down, you can go right down to Massimo if that money could be then put on someone else to make a move in another line. Nasiah Wangadeen Malira has been talked a bit of. He's off to a hot start, if you like him and think it.
What do you think about him?
I didn't start him, and I think he's just a bit below the averaging 105 for the whole season. Like,
yeah,
there were only six defenders that kind of went at that 105 mark last year, and there's a lot more now off to a really, really hot start, but that it's very hard to continue that for the whole year. So I kind of have him maybe going like 100. I think he's just not quite I think he's just a little bit of a tier below, but he has started really strongly and he's going to make some money. So he's probably not for me because we'll talk about this a bit more, but I think I feel most comfortable in a kind of guns and rookies team. And I got sucked into some of these mid prices at the start of the year. And now I'm using all my correction trades to try and get back to guns and rookies. So for me, I'm not keen on Nasiah because he kind of is in that middle tier, I guess.
Yep, for sure. No, I am with you. I think he's just a step below. If I'm trading Young up, and I think Sheezel's probably the easiest swap available.
Yep.
Otherwise, you know, Ryan still has that really good buy. You know, you might be wondering why Ryan has gone at these incredible heights. I mean, his time on ground has improved. But there is, you know, those three injuries from last week. So it's, and, you know, he was on ground and that extended out the game time. So it's like a little bit misleading, but his time on ground is improved, which does help when you're spending an extra 5% of time on the field. Your scoring's going to keep going up. But I think with his buy being the round 13 buy, it's like a pretty safe bet. Otherwise, Tom Stewart still looks like Tom Stewart.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the guy that went 116, excluding his injury last year. So I don't think he's going to be a bad pick. But I've seen that a lot of people, I guess, get stuck where they want to trade him, but they also have some of these injured defensive rookies. And, you know, I think at that stage, D'Ambrosio is just like an absolute guaranteed trade. And he's got a break even of negative 82.
Yep.
So, you know, he's going to make a boatload of cash and he's scoring pretty well. I think if you have to do Young down to Massimo, you just pull that trigger.
Yeah, I think that's totally fine.
I think it's like a pretty comfortable trade. I think there's some people that are playing around with some options I'm uncomfortable with. I saw some people talking about trading in Winhager or Bramble. I understand why, because they feel trapped that they don't have enough defensive depth that they can, you know, they can't go to a rookie, but they don't want to spend their money to go up to a Ryan or a Stewart because they then can't do their midfield transfers or forward trades where they, you know, want to go up in those situations. I think maybe you could look at like a sideways to Newman potentially off a buy, but this it's still not like my number one choice. And I think that's the same category as Wangani Miller, where you're like, it might work out, but it just feels a little bit risky for not that much monetary gain.
Yeah, for some reason, I'm just not quite sold on Newman being the 105 either. Some of the polls we put out at the start of the year, most people projected him kind of be like 99, 100-ish, probably maybe similar to Nasiah. So if I had Young, which I do, I would either be going down to D'Ambrosio or I was going to say another cash cow, but I don't know if there really is one. It's probably just Massimo. Or finding the money to go up to a guaranteed top liner like Sheasel, Houston, or Stuart Ryan. Could go to Sicily, but he's still got an average score in his rolling average, so you could just wait a bit on him too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really love what I saw from the Hawks. That game plan they started with Melbourne was absolutely wild. For those that missed the game, the highest amount of marks in any quarter of any game last year was 50. And Hawks had 46 marks with 5.5 minutes left because they just were playing keeping score and still losing. So Sicily started the game. I think he had 13 disposals and 9 marks in the first quarter during that chip football. And surely, given they were down, I think it was like 32-1, try that again. No. And look, Mass got a boost because of his first quarter, but not to the same extent as Sicily. I think Sicily had like 60 at quarter time. Yeah. I'm still not super keen on Sicily, and I don't think they come out with that again because that tactic did not work.
And Massimo, we'll have to. Massimo only has to average, 70-ish to kind of make a heap of money, and he's got two good scores in there. So, yeah, negative 82 break even when you're averaging 105. I'm not going to pass that up.
He got traded into 50,000 teams last week, which
is
a lot of teams.
A lot of people went early on him.
I mean, what happens if he got injured or put out a 50? Yeah. Like that blew my mind. Seeing he was in that many teams, it's quite absurd.
Risky.
Anyway,
but it paid off.
We'll move on. To those that have Nick Dacos, in the midfield, even just to spice things up, would you consider trading him?
No, probably not. But I could definitely see the appeal of doing it. He's got. Obviously, this 54 now, and then he comes into Brisbane at the Gabba, which is going to be quite a tough matchup. And then is it Finn the next week?
Well, if Finn makes the team,
well, Finn tagged Oliver to an 80, so Finn's in the team, I reckon.
Yeah, potentially. I think Huss Waite needs to come in. They did lose,
potentially.
Quite badly.
Then it's the Hawthorn in round 4 and then the bye in round 5 and then Port, who are the hardest team for midfielders, and he may get Drew. So I could see why some people would maybe want to do it because he could drop a lot of cash, but I'm still in the camp of hold your premiums. And we've got more trades this year, but I don't think we have that many where you want to get Dacos out and then get him back in because you will want him back in.
So Supercoach Plus has him projected to go 113 against Brisbane and then 98 against Hawthorn. And just only fall to 570K,
okay,
which is only an extra 60-70K from where he is right now.
Mm.
I mean, 113 I feel like is a little bit unders. I think he's going to beat that this week against Brisbane. So he might not even fall that much money. I struggle to believe that it's going to be like a really good trade at this stage. I felt like you knew coming into the season that this was the rocky part and this is what you were deciding between.
Yeah.
Like, do I hold him or not hold him? And given there's seemingly some players that are, I guess, more important to get, I don't think trading out Dacos is a way to like massively improve your team over the long term. If you really felt this badly about Dacos, I just don't know why you started him.
Yeah.
I kind of thought this was somewhat going to happen. Maybe not to the extent of 54, but the difference between 54 and 84 is not that significant. It's like 10K, 15K.
Yeah, and I don't think it's worth using two trades to get Dacos out, get him back in for, 70K gain or something. And I guess in the tangenting a little bit, but on the same vein, if you've got premiums on this buy, like the Tom Greens or the Flanders or the Whitfields or the Tukes, I personally don't think it's worth trading them out unless you've got heaps of them. I think it's better to just hold them because you don't want to waste a trade to get them out and then you'll want them back.
They're all good.
Yeah.
There's no missing.
So if you started those buy players, you were probably looking ahead to this round and knowing who you'd – like you might have – if you've got a decent rookie on the field to cover them, you might have been planning for that. So, yeah, I put Dacos in the boat with them. Don't trade a guy out if you plan to get him back in.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can if it's going to be considerable price drop. I just don't think we're necessarily going to see it with Dacos, especially if he's a guy that could put out, you know, if he puts out 130, he barely falls in price.
Yeah, and yeah,
so, and he scored two of them this season.
And yes, we got more trades this year. But if you're like you and me, we're already down to 34 or 35. So they don't grow on trees.
No. Speaking of that, I am a struggling Jordan Dawson owner. He's now put out back-to-back poor scores. I know you're not in this exact same boat, Pig. He has a break-even of 189. He will fall a little bit more in price than Dacos, apparently, but still projected a 117 and a 113 in his next two, only gets him down to 600K, only falls 45K. Do you think owners should consider moving elsewhere?
No, exactly the same deal for me. I think he's like best, you know, kind of top eight, top 10 mids. You'll want him back at some stage, so I don't think it's worth trading him out. And just for those Dawson owners, Dawson averages 124 against Freo. It's his highest scoring opponent for his career. And he loves playing at Optus as well. So there's a potential that he actually bounces back and gets back to it this week. And like you said, he was a high scoring, you know, fantasy player. So, and he had 12, he had a heap of tackles. There's a point where he was
12.
There's a point where he was on 12 tackles for 60 super coach or something. So obviously it just means he's butchering and turning it over. If he just fixes that, and he's one of the best kicks in the league normally, like he could bounce back at any given week, and I wouldn't even be surprised if it's this week.
God, I hope so.
I just wanted to give you some optimism.
No, I appreciate it. I think I've seen some people float the idea of trading him to steal to bank 120K. I mean, I definitely don't think trading to like a Sarong or a Butters or a Green is worth it. I think you could make an argument for Jack Steele if that 120K did something drastic to your team, but I really don't like trading in somebody whose role is really good and he's just being let down by kicking efficiency, but in a way in which is recoverable. It's not like he's attempting like really hard to pull off kicks and it's just not working. He's just in a down sort of patch of form. I don't think there's anything to suggest.
I think when the dust settles and kind of everyone's average is kind of evening out and, you know, everyone's in mid-season form, Dawson could be putting 5 or 10 points on steel every single week. So I feel like you'd then be trying to get back up to Dawson and when you could have just kept him.
He's actually going at a very a promising CBA rate, 84% in round one, 86% in round two.
Yeah, wow.
So he's the main CBA ball winner, or maybe not ball winner, but main CBA player for the Crows. And I know they're not really, I mean, I think the midfield's getting it done, but the rest of the team's not getting it done. So they might need to make some changes up in their midfield mix. But I feel like Sam Berry's got potential to be dropped after he was subbed out. I mean, maybe not, but he might lose some CBAs. They've got to get Rankin more into that midfield mix. And honestly, Crouch is looking a bit better than Laird this season. So one of the two of them is going to have a significant CBA drop in the next couple of weeks. People are tipping Crows to make the finals, even push the top four, and they've had a very slow start. Yeah, so
they're going to need.
We need to see some action.
They're going to need to change something up, I think. And I think Dawson, as the captain, will be, you know, aware of his turnovers and his issues, and he'll be looking to fix it. I'd also put Libra in the same boat of, you know, we think he's going to be a top eight, top 10 mid. So I wouldn't be trading him out either, especially with West Coast this week.
Libby got scaled down 5 from 120 to 115. That was painful. Mm. But as you said, West Coast, which ironically is one of his worst teams that he plays against, has a career high of only 120 against them, which is one of his worst. But I'm hopeful that he'll bounce back strongly this week. If we jump into a very similar, I guess, in some ways, the great Nick Martin. Another one who's been let down somewhat with his disposals. His role seems quite good off halfback. We both got to watch him live. What did you think of his game this week? Did you see any signs of life or enough to hold him?
Okay, I think there's definitely enough to hold him. I think he still had over 30 disposals. They're just kind of like all uncontested and kind of not that great for Supercoach. He actually had a couple of intercept marks where he kind of beat his opponent and took a mark, which I was surprised in, and that's probably what got him a reasonable score. I'm in the position where I've got two other trades that I really want to do, so I could boost Martin out and say get Sarong, or I could save the boost, maybe get one more look at Martin because he plays St Kilda, who are one of the easiest teams to score against last year. So if he doesn't feast on St Kilda, then I'll happily punt him. But then that maybe, because I'm kind of waiting to try and get Flanders and Tuke in maybe soon after their bye. So maybe Martin could be my ticket to them is kind of what I'm thinking. Because we know how valuable a boost is when you're trying to upgrade.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to have burnt two boosts already. So I'm thinking maybe I just hold Martin, get one more look at him against Saints. And then if he's still failing, just go to Flanders or something like that is how I'm thinking.
Yeah, look, I think he'll do really well because Saints just like points to those defenders. But my concern with Martin is he's going to have to average 40 touches a game to have a Supercoach relevant average, of 105 plus. He takes so many short little chislers, those stab kicks low to the ground, and they're quite hard to pull off. He doesn't seem to realize that, I mean, maybe it helps the team, but when he turns it over, when he's kicked it 20 meters and it's a turnover, like it's really damaging for the team and it's also really damaging for Supercoach.
Yeah.
Like he's been having these huge minus points when it's an uncontested kick, no pressure, and he turns it over. And he had a couple of them. I think he had like four of them. Five of them last week. Even though he went at, 77% disposal efficiency, 24 effective disposals out of his 31, those five where you miss your target and you turn it over were big Supercoach point losses. And he doesn't really do much else on the stat sheet other than just kick and handball. It's not like he tackles, barely marks.
Yep.
So you're very reliant on him kicking. If he was bombing it long like Luke Ryan, like every kick, just bombing it long, he would be averaging 115.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
but he doesn't do it.
But I guess the upside of that is if he didn't have those turnovers, that could have nearly been a 110-120 game just with the sheer volume he had. But I don't – like we picked him thinking he could maybe average 105, either slot in him, just become a keeper, or make us 100K. I'm pretty doubtful he's going to do that now, so I think he can definitely be traded. Especially if you don't have other fix-ups to do, I think you could definitely get rid of him. I don't really want to waste a boost just for that when I could probably just wait a week and just flop into Flanders next week.
I'm genuinely surprised. Like, I clearly got him incredibly wrong. Mm. I thought he was going to be one of the easiest picks in the whole game.
Yeah.
He already plays like 95% time on ground. He came off for the first time in the last quarter. He was literally playing 100% time on ground till the last quarter. So he's always there, which is great, for scoring, and he gets a lot of the ball. All these things, I'm like, okay, he gets a lot of the ball and he's off the halfback. How can this go wrong at 490K? Like, it almost sounds too good to be true. And it pretty much was. The types of kicks that he does is just not great for Supercoach scoring. I need the long bombs, those 40-plus kicks to a pack. Just give me some of those, Nick Martin, not these small little low ones to the grounds. I think I'm trading him out this week.
Yeah,
I'm quite
that's totally
sure fine. I will.
I reckon.
There's a couple of guys I'm interested in trading him to. I think if you're going down the mid-pricer route, you could potentially turn him into a Mackay of the Harry variety.
Right.
I mean, he's what, 398K, I believe. That's right, 398K. It's got a break even of negative 17. It's projected to go up 60K after his 130 and 112. He's got a decent fixture run playing North Melbourne at Marvel and then Fremantle. But I don't think there is much of a case, to be honest, of going for Mackay when you have Tom Powell available at 312K. How do you see the Tom Powell pick?
He's in that area that I don't really love to dabble in, just in my kind of more guns and rookies approach. Like I these are the kind of top prices where I could start them, but they're not really someone I love trading in. But like, having said that, Tom Powell's incredible. I think he had the highest CBAs for North this week just gone, and he was right up there the week before. I think he's definitely in their top three rotation. Like, there's LDU, probably him, and then George Wardlaw. So yeah, he's absolutely one of their main CBA guys, and I think he's had a couple of big scores. Whether he kind of can keep up that and be a top forward, I'm not certain. But I think he can still make you quite a bit of money in the meantime.
So I guess I'm with you in that it's that price range you hate trading into, right? The 312K, it's an awful price. But the way that I'm looking at it is he literally had 93% CBAs on the weekend, which is as much as a top end CBA. Like, they didn't even get that top end CBA mids. That's outrageous how many CBAs he got. And the previous week he had 76, and he was, you know, the second mid behind LDU, and then a considerable drop off between the next couple. Getting 93% more than LDU just screams to me that he is at least the number two mid for North Melbourne this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So his role is a midfielder. He's 312K. As a pure midfielder, the last 2 weeks he's gone 95 against GWS, who I still think are one of the best teams in the competition,
yep,
and 129 last week. Now, I don't expect him to be averaging, you know, 105 plus as a midfielder. I don't think that can be my expectation, but he's playing pure mid for North Melbourne. I feel like there's a very real chance that he is able to go 95 plus as a pure CBA number two mid. And 95 plus in the forward line feels like it might be a keeper. So I want to take that risk. Plus, if I'm wrong and he scores 80 this week, he makes 60K in 1 week, which is the same amount Mackay is making with 115. So I know people are tossing up between two of them, but one's 70K cheaper and you're making the same amount of money, most likely. Between the two of those, I think Powell's a no-brainer. And to be honest, I would feel quite uncomfortable missing Powell, because if he is a keeper, you get quite badly burned, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I'm not that concerned about missing him. I think if he becomes a keeper and like he's showing this, that he's going to keep doing it, maybe I'll just wait till he's proven it to me and then I'll buy him at 500K with like Massimo's money or something like that. I know I'm missing a lot of money that's compared to someone who bought him at
200K. Yeah. That's not like I'm paying 50K more to wait and see. That's 200K more to wait and see.
Yeah. And if I was really confident he'd be a keeper, then I'd definitely buy it. But I'm not. I don't necessarily see that from him yet, but yeah, if you think he's going to be 95, then you pretty much have to buy him. Like, he's non-negotiable nearly.
I think the thing that's a bit scary is like what is his upside? I don't think many of us were considering him. I guess we mentioned him in the preseason, but it wasn't like a strong definitely consider. But what is his upside? Like, I know he's averaging 112. Once if he goes 105 plus?
Well,
I have no idea what his ceiling could be.
If he's still doing it in a few weeks, then I'll look into him a bit more. But yeah, I'm not trying to talk anyone out of him. I think he actually could be really good. But if he does put out a few 80s in a row, like you said, he makes a 60, maybe makes another 30, maybe makes 100K, but then he kind of stalls. And then that's a bit of a fail, but...
It makes 100K. It's hardly a massive fail, though.
Yeah, but if you could have had a rookie in with that spot of that money and then put it on somewhere else and they make 180, it's a bit average. But, yeah, it's just this middle bracket that I personally, I think I'm trying to... I got sucked into it with my starting team and I'm trying to get out of it.
Yeah. No, I see what you mean. I'm just... And I honestly hate this price bracket. I hate taking... like mid prices from teams that, you know, North Melbourne could just get defeated by 100 points and then not score at all. And everyone in the entire team does badly, which happens to Hawthorn sometimes.
Yeah.
And West Coast. And North Melbourne are at risk of that. So I don't love that, but I just feel like the reward is too great. And the bailout of, you know, Nick Martin down to him, which frees up cash for me to, you know, fix a different issue. All the moving parts work out well. He's also currently in 0% of teams. That's
going to change.
But even looking at the top five trade-ins this week,
yeah.
Unless I'm missing it, which I might be, he's not there. I wonder how many people are actually going to trade him in because, again, it's not like a – he's not a sexy pick.
No, he could be in a few weeks when he's averaging 100. Then he could be more sexy.
Yeah. Well, I am.
You go for it.
At this moment, yeah. We'll see how this tunes in. It could derail my. I can't really get derailed more than I am, Pig. It's only up from here for me. So
yeah.
I have nothing to lose at this point. Look. Do we feel similarly to Nick Martin as we do with Ollie Wines? Does he require a trade out?
I pretty much. Put them in exactly the same boat. You could hold them and see them for another week if you want. You could trade them. Like, I don't think they're dire, either of them, but they may both lose a bit of money this week. So you could definitely get rid of him. I mean, Wines has Melbourne, which is kind of middle of the pack for difficulty, but he is back at Adelaide Oval. Maybe that helps him. You could see him for one more week and then just pretty easily pivot him to Flanders or Tuke if you wanted. Or if you've just got the money to get him to a Sarong or a Butters or someone now, you could easily do that. So, yeah, I put him in the same boat as Martin. I'm not going to push you either way.
So I think where I feel uncomfortable with Wines as an owner who is trading him out this week is this was a really good opportunity against Richmond for him to put out like a nice ceiling game. Horn Francis, who had 71% CVAs, the most for Port Adelaide in round one, didn't play in round two, but instead Wines only had 64% CBAs because Willem Drew had 67% instead, which to me kind of feels like they might see him as that fourth mid because both games he's now been the fourth mid in that, you know, CBA rotation for Port, which isn't what I thought I was buying. I was under the impression, as the preseason had told us, as Ken had told us, as all the interviews had said, that, you know, Wines is back into that one or two CBA mid and they work the team around him and it's good. They can, you know, deload Rosie and Butters and keep them around the 70%, you know, CBA mark. And I kind of thought that's what I was getting into. But what happens next week? Drew was awesome. He was so good.
Drew's a very, very good player. Like when he gets those 70% CBA roles, he always scores well. And I feel like if he actually went to a team like West Coast or something, he would be a great player. For Supercoach, I mean. And like Hawthorn tag Clary last week, do they say, hey Drew, go and do the same thing and give him all the CBAs again? Not sure. I'm not sure if Drew's been tagging this year or not.
I mean, he could, though, and Horn Francis might not play, but he might play, might come back. And if that's the case, is Wines going to be capped to a maximum of 60% CBAs? That just possibly. Doesn't feel like what I was buying, and I understand that he scored well. You know, he's had two 90s, and I thank him very much for that. And he might make 10K next week, but... there's a very real possibility he goes back to 50% CBAs and scores a 60. And I'm trying desperately to avoid that because I don't see what I was hoping was the 100-plus upside came to average until the buys. At this CBA rate, I just don't see it. So for me, it's clear that I need to, if I can, move him on. I think you're probably safe to wait a week and get.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One of your Tuke or Flanders, and that would be, I think that would be a very strong move. But for people like me who are in panic stations or problem stations, and you know, have an extra 120K in the bank, you have more 160K in the bank. You have some other options to consider trading.
Yep.
I think I'm in a situation that I'm sure other people are where I can shop in the Sarong Butters green basket. I mean, same as Jack Steele, I can shop there too. But out of those players, which way would you lean for someone who didn't have any of them?
The way I'm playing now is go up and pay for the big dog. Not necessarily like overpay kind of 700K. You could for Bont, but if you've got that cash. But yeah, one of those guys you miss like in that 620-ish range, like a Butters or an LDU or a Sarong or even a Rosie. He had a down game, but only because of disposal efficiency. I'd go one of those because I'm pretty confident they're kind of in that top range. Whereas,
But which one should I do?
Oh, you want me to tell you one?
Please help me.
Zach Butters.
Zach Butters.
Yeah.
All right. He was second on my list, actually. He wasn't last on my list. But
who is your one?
Please, I just want to know why I should take Butters over Green. I mean, I guess Green the buy, but Butters over Sarong, for example.
I just think like all our preseason thoughts and research and what we'd looked into was pretty much consensus that Butters was going to average over 115 and potentially even push to 120 if everything went right. I don't think really anyone had Sarong in that boat. Like, he's had two insane games coming out the gate. So he might just be proving us wrong, but, you know, our preseason research did say that he might kind of be between 110 and 115. So I'll kind of back in what we thought at the start of the year, and that like they've both got very low break evens now. They're both going to rocket up in price. But Sarong also, he hasn't been tagged this year, but I know he can be quite susceptible to a tag. That could be something to think about. Although Butters could be tagged at any time as well. But I think just preseason we thought Butters had the slightly higher average by the end of the year, so I'd buy him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely finding it difficult to choose between them. I think I agree that those are probably my top two choices.
Yeah.
Butters has played West Coast and Richmond. So I'm trying not to take massively into account his current average, which is ridiculous, and he's been so, so, so good. He does play the next three in a row at Adelaide Oval. Melbourne, Essendon and Fremantle, all teams who do like points. So he could just continue on the giant scoring run. But the reason I'm leaning Sarong at the moment, which might be silly, is eye test wise, he is doing the thing that I love the most, where he demands the ball at all times. Like when he's running past anybody that has the ball, he almost wants to take it out of their hands. It's like, just give it to me and let me do something with it.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I think when you watch plays like that, when Dacos was doing it last year, you're like, okay, that guy is so desperate for the ball. He wants it at all costs. He will run into every single bit of space to get this ball. And players that I have, like Dawson, don't do that. Like Dawson kind of just goes from contest to contest and he'll do his tackles. And when you kick up the line, he'll be there. But he's not bursting into any open space 15 meters away and being like, put this ball into my hands right now. And ironically, Dawson should be doing that because they need the ball in his hands more often. But he's not the type of player that does that. And Sarong is doing it both games I've watched, and both times he's being absolutely desperate for the ball. So I want to pick him because eye test wise, I love that he is just so desperate to get it. And Fife being in the middle, getting those handballs out, he's barely kicking. You know, Fife getting those clearances. It goes to Sarong.
Yeah.
It's a great combination. It's working really well.
I think you can definitely trust your eye test on that. The only flag I'd say is that Sarong has Adelaide, Carlton, and Port Adelaide to come. And Adelaide are the second hardest for inside mids. Port are the hardest. And then Carlton are also kind of in the medium bucket. So he doesn't have an easy run at all. But, you know, that eye test says a lot. And there's some of the guys in the AFL fantasy world, I can't remember which podcast started, but they talk about observable thirst. It's where a player is just so thirsty and you can for the ball and they want it. And it's kind of what you described. And if Sarong's got the observable thirst, then go for it.
Yeah, in my dream team, I started my only two midfield proper primos were Dawson and Sarong. I'm backing the eye test on this one. But I wouldn't like, if you want to pick Butters, he's passed the eye test with absolute flying colors anyway. Mm. Like, it's so hard. I'm splitting hairs. I think Green on the bye you probably can't do. And to be honest, I don't think Green looks as good as either of them. He's looked amazing, but the others have just looked amazing. Plus one.
I hate it when a guy averages 140 and he doesn't look amazing. Imagine when he starts looking amazing.
All right, yeah, he just needs to do a little bit more for me. But again, he falls into the category of who have they played.
Yeah, for sure. Collingwood, you know, easiest midfielder in the comp.
Basically, trash, North Melbourne and West Coast. It's very hard for me to get a full pick. And you don't get those fixtures again. So, they literally don't get those fixtures again. So they're gone now for the rest of the season. They don't play those teams.
Yeah, well, I think we've ruled Green out as a trade-in because he has a bye. So that's fine.
Yeah, but in any case anyone was wondering if they should hold and do it the next week. I don't think it's worth it. Just do it now, but for Sarong or Butters instead. Jumping into, a contentious talking point. Brody Grundy scored 99. He did rise in price, which is great, but now his break-even's kind of reset to 112. Yeah. Is it crazy if people have nailed their teams to consider trading him out to Sherry, who's gone back-to-back decent tons, or someone like English, who just looks like a super coach scoring god?
I traded Grundy out as soon as the round opened. I've had enough. You and I talked about we didn't really want to start him, but like it was the right move. There were two reasons I didn't. So I really wanted to start English and not start Grundy. I guess the two reasons I didn't, one was because Grundy had the 130 something in round zero, looked like he was going to make a fair bit of cash, and it would have been a very, very ballsy move to go against that.
Yes.
The other reason was that Tim English in his first two rounds had Melbourne, who Max Gawn's quite a hard matchup, and then he had Jared Witts, who's one of the hardest matchups in the game. So I thought, you know, those two might limit English to kind of like around a 105 or 110 average, and then he'll plummet in price. Then next thing you know, Jared Witts is a laid out, and he gets to go against Moyle, and he dominates him. And now he comes up against West Coast, then Geelong, Essendon, St Kilda. So two of the easiest matchups in the league in terms of West Coast and St Kilda. And then Geelong and Essendon aren't hard by any means. So English has this really juicy four matches coming up.
Yeah.
At the same time, Tristan Cherry is the other option. He also has a really nice run. Like, he's got Carlton, who, when Pitnett plays, are kind of middle of the pack, but if they're just playing Tom De Koning, they're very, very easy. He then has Brisbane, who are quite easy, and then Geelong, who are kind of middle-ish. So they both have really good runs coming up. And one of the reasons I traded Grundy, I'm really keen to get rid of Grundy, because he has the hardest run of all rucks up into the mid-season bye, so not even this early one, the mid-season one. So he went Melbourne, Collingwood, Essendon, but now he has to play against Nank, who is pretty good at winning the hitouts and taking the hitouts away from his opponents. Has to play him at the MCG, which is like a less stoppage ground. So I think this week's actually going to be quite hard for Grundy. He then does get West Coast, so he does get a really, really good one. Then he has a bye, so he's not scoring for you. And then he has Wits. And then Hawthorn, who are also quite restrictive. So four of his next five matchups for Grundy are either hard or a bye. So I kind of, and just from the eye test, like, I don't think he's a player he was. I think he's past it in a way. Like, he did have a 130 on Gorn, but I'm just really not liking what I'm seeing. And there's probably a bit of bias because I didn't want to start him and I got tricked.
Yeah.
But only one juicy matchup in the next five rounds. His job was to make me 100K while English dropped. I'm now not seeing English could very easily not drop and Grundy could not make money. So I'm ready to get rid of Grundy, but there is a bit of emotion attached to it. I'll admit that.
I do think that it's not a silly move if you have the trades available to do it this week to get rid of Grundy. I do think it's a massive luxury trade because these are the golden weeks to like get your team right, get any player that's, you know, rising a lot in price and like fix some things. So it is a massive luxury to be able to do that. I do agree that I don't think Grundy has been great on the eye test. I know he got 19 touches, which was great to see this week, but it didn't seem like he had that big of an impact on the game. I know he scored 99, which is like good enough. I was hoping, I think we were all hoping to get the 105 plus Grundy.
Yeah.
We might be buying a, you know, 95 to 100 range Grundy, which is definitely not enough. I think for me, you know, my team has other problems. I probably could do Grundy. I could hold Wines a week and get Grundy to English instead of getting Sarong. But I do think despite this very tough upcoming fixture, all it takes is, you know, Wits being out in round six and then he goes West Coast into Moyle, for example. Like, we don't really know what's going to happen around the corner and there's still, he's still not, like, he still has another 50K he could go up with the spike game. He just didn't need to do it in round zero. If he did it in round three, that was going to look a lot better. I'm still going to reassess at his bye.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to get there. I'm going to go through Richmond. Nank's been giving up a lot of disposals, I believe, around the ground. So maybe we'll see that. And then the West Coast matchup should hopefully be good. And then I can judge from that. But I do think trading to Sherry is not crazy.
So
100K.
That's probably the next question is if you do trade him, which, like I said, I'm actually in that boat you talked about with Wines or Grundy. I'm actually trading Grundy and holding Nick Martin. At the moment.
Yeah, I'm doing the opposite of you.
Yeah, so, but then let's say for people that are trading Grundy, do you just pay up for Tim English because he's got like a 148 break even off the top of my head or something around there?
He does, 148.
Oh, I have looked him up.
Very good.
He could easily get that against West Coast and then goes kind of Geelong, Essendon, St Kilda is a nice run where you'd probably be wanting to captain him or vice-captain him every week. Or do you go Jerry, who has a very much lower break even? I think it's in the 40s. And he has also a nice run coming up. So I guess it's kind of what I was thinking It might even be nearly in that same, like, Tom Powell versus actually just paying up for a premium mid kind of boat for me, where I don't really, I feel like I'm sick of using trades to go down to someone that'll make me money that then I'll have to trade up, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just want to buy the dude that sits in my team till round 24.
Yeah.
But, like, Jerry has a, he does have quite a bit of money to make. I was a bit doubtful of him at the start of the season. You and I talked about this. He didn't really look like someone who could rack up possessions and get around the ground and take marks. And he's done it a little bit, but he's actually scoring a lot from tackles and contested possessions, a little bit Kieran Briggsy in a way. So, like, that is good for his Supercoach scoring. So, yeah, I'll probably still have a think about this throughout the week and see what I want to do. But, yeah, I think I'm a bit angry at myself for going away from Guns and Rookies, getting sucked into a lot of mid prices that I didn't want, like Grundy, and kind of just trying to go back to what I think I should have started with is kind of how I'm feeling anyway.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I think we both at the stage sent each other our Grundy teams. So
yeah,
our Grundy teams, our English teams.
Yeah.
So we both definitely had him in mind, and part of this mess I'm in at the moment is because I didn't back my gut and I went with people. The round zero guys, if Grundy didn't get 139, this would have been a different story.
Round zero has kind of been a blessing and a curse because I get angry when I look at it trick me into Grundy, but then I also feel good that, like, I would not have started Heaney without it, and that has been the funnest ride of the season, so...
Absolutely.
A blessing and a curse, absolutely. But yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is what it is. No, interested to see, because people will trade him, so I'm interested to see how that works out for them.
Yeah.
I think it will be good, but I don't have the trades to do it myself.
Yeah.
I reckon I would if I had the opportunity.
Hardest run for Ruckman up until kind of his round 12 bye. West Coast and GWS are kind of some good ones in there, but he's got a lot of red ones in between and a bye, which I think can't be understated when we have so many players on this round 5 bye, especially now we've all bought, like, kind of even the Roberts and the Jordans and the to go with our Dacos and our Heaneys. There's going to be a lot of players on that bye, so culling Grundy and getting rid of one I don't think is the worst option.
All right, so I'm going to move on to a different topic.
Yep.
Some of these rookies need to be fixed. I guess the major question is, which rookies would you look to trade out, and which ones would you look to bring in as, like, a priority trade for this week?
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess after we've gone through which rookies are coming in and why, how we prioritize fixing rookies compared to getting some of these mid prices like Massimo or Powell versus also bringing in the top end guys like Sarong. So a bit of a loaded question, but we'll start with the rookies of who you think are the must number one priority grabs for this week.
All right. If you don't have Colby McKercher, I think he is the number one.
Who wouldn't have Colby McKercher?
You didn't, but I'm glad you've corrected your ways. So negative 68 break even, averaging 91. Like, he's probably going to be the highest scoring rookie in the game this year. So Colby, I probably put, like, Jack Carroll and Jeremy Sharp in the same boat. Their average is very similar. They're the same price. Their break even is very similar. You're not going to be able to get all of these rookies that I'm going to talk about. So it's probably not the, like. People were saying to me, like, how do I get this guy? Do I trade out this guy? But you're probably not going to be able to get them all.
No,
every year you miss some. So Jack Carroll, Jeremy Sharp, both really good options. If you miss one, I don't think it's the end of the world. But Aaron Cadman, you wouldn't be trading in now because he's on a buy and he's gone up already. He does have a spike score in there. Harvey Thomas, same. You and I. We were very hot on this guy in the preseason, and then he kind of had an average first two games and then dominated.
Damn it.
We just said he passed the eye test. He looked good, even though he looks like a teenager.
I went Buku instead, and Buku's fine, but I wanted Thomas.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, you wouldn't trade him in necessarily. Ollie Dempsey, I think, is a really good option. Negative 71 break even. He scored a 91, I think, in round one and had a really good preseason. I just think a forward playing for Geelong is going to have some variance. He'll probably have some 40 or 50 games eventually against good teams, but he's still a really good option. He's going to make a lot of money. So I'd put him up with kind of those top guys if you want him. Matt Roberts, he's already gone up a lot in price, but he's still got a negative 35 break even and scoring 90s.
Yeah, Roberts is really good.
Do you reckon it's too late to buy Roberts at 225?
No, I'd still buy Roberts. I think he's got more. If he's got another 100, 120K in him. I mean, I wouldn't buy him over, some of the others, but he's still a buy if you don't have him, I think. Last week.
Yeah, because I remember around the same price we bought Bailey, I bought Bailey Humphrey around 220 or something, and he still made a lot of money last year, so you could still do that.
Do not remind me. We've moved on from last season. Did you miss him? I missed all of the rookies last season that made money.
All right, so then there's also Darcy Wilson.
Pattern. There's a pattern here.
Darcy Wilson hasn't risen in price yet. I think he's a really good option. Negative 51 break even, plays Essendon at Marvel this week. I actually think he can spike score like we saw in a preseason. I wouldn't be surprised if it's this week against Essendon. Riley Sanders hasn't moved yet. He's just a really good player. I think him and McKercher, the two Tassie boys, they just find the pill. I think they're both great options. So if you don't have him, there's a few guys you could probably still buy Blake Howes, 194. He's gone up a lot.
Everyone has House.
Yeah, cool.
Everyone's got House.
Harley Reid.
You don't know what you're doing.
Charlie Dean's got a low break even, but he was dropped last week. I wouldn't go there. Buku has a low break even, but I don't know. You're a Buku. I know. What do you think? I'm not sure about his.
I think it's in the don't buy, don't sell.
Yeah, just hold him.
Category. I don't think he's better than some of the others. He might be better than Burgess. I think he's better than Jai Clark. I don't think I'd trade him in though. It's the right price, but I guess. Well, let's talk about rookies that you could potentially trade out. I guess most of the ones we haven't mentioned potential trade outs. Anyone that's not playing, you got to get rid of, or who's injured, probably need to fix that if you can.
As in drop, not players on the buy necessarily, you mean?
Yeah, that are drops, because you could have picked anybody. So hard to cater to everyone with that. I don't think, down back, if you're holding one injured guy, if that's a Reid or a Caulfield, I don't think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be forcing a trade to Pink or Draper or someone to try and fix it. I mean, if you trade to Pink, and he's the type of guy that might make 60K, and it's not worth the trade. Caulfield will be back. I don't know. We haven't got a timeline, but
Bevo did say it was pretty bad, he thought. But
I mean, still. I don't know how bad's bad, but if it's 6 weeks, he's probably still making more money than Pink in the same time frame, because you're probably only trading him at the buy.
Yeah. And same with Zach Reid. When he comes back, he'll be back in and making money, so I don't think you have to trade Reid or Caulfield.
Yeah, well, we'll see what Caulfield's timeline is. But I still don't think these are the right options to trade to.
Yeah, there's no one putting their hand up and saying, you must get me in your back line.
I think you just wait till round seven. You cop the Roberts and McKercher DPP, and then you can trade them to midfielders. And you just do that strategy if you can get there through the best 18. I think that's totally fine sort of strategy.
Yeah.
So just quickly, players, I guess the rookies that might appear the weakest, would you consider trading out a Jai Clark, a Tom Berry, or an Alex Sexton this week?
No, I don't think I'm going to. If you missed a McKercher or a Sanders in particular and you kind of need to free up their spot to get them, then yeah, I absolutely would. But if it's kind of to get someone in that middle like a Darcy Wilson or I'm not sure, maybe. But Clark had a 60. He actually looked better than that. He was just very fumbly. It could have been bigger.
I mean, he's so fumbly.
Yeah.
Way too fumbly.
If that guy didn't fumble, he touches the ball a lot. He just fumbles it. It was only his second or third game or something, though, so he'll be all right. Negative three break even. I'd probably put him in the Buku camp. Like, I've got him. I'm not going to trade him, but I wouldn't trade him in. Berry and Sexton, I'm still think these guys have quite a bit more money to make. Like, they both had very bad games. But actually, all of Gold Coast pretty much had a very bad game. I don't think they really travelled well to Marvel. They didn't really look very good. They also had Bailey Humphrey pull out last minute and they had to shuffle some things around. So I think that actually really hurt them because Berry kind of wasn't getting around the ground more. He was staying up forward. He actually got burnt like three or four times. Teammates. He was open inside 50 and they kicked it to Ben King instead, which is fair enough. But on another day, that could have been Tom Berry. I talked him up a little bit last week, so maybe I'm defending him a bit, but I think he'll be a lot better than this, and I think he's still got money to make. Sexton wasn't great, but also he got thrown forward in the last quarter because of that.
Yeah.
Humphrey bet missing. They then sub Atkins on, and Atkins went into the back line, and Sexton had to go forward. So, like, they're still both cheap enough that I'm pretty confident they could have a spike score and restart their cash gen. I'm not too worried about them, but if you didn't have one of these really kind of must-haves, yeah, they could go. But I'm not forcing it, though. Like, I would have to boost to, say, get a Berry to a Dempsey, and I'm not going to do that because I think my boost is more valuable. And Berry, I'm still confident Berry will make just as much money as Dempsey over the 10 weeks or something.
I think, look, I don't think trading like Clark, Sexton or Berry to even, I guess, Carroll, who I probably think is the best of the rookies most people missed, if we can call it that.
Yeah.
I mean, Dempsey, his role has been a bit, like looking at the heat map, he has been playing a bit deeper, maybe push back Manor played a bit higher up the ground above him. I don't think either of those demand trade-ins when we have next week another look at Sam Darcy, who dominated and looked really, really good. I think, like, let's just wait a week, fix up other problems in our team, the mid-prices, the premiums before they shift, and then take another look at someone like Darcy. Unless you have a rookie that's just really needs to be fixed and you can get a Carroll, do that. But otherwise, I think we could probably wait another week to have a look at Sam Darcy. I don't think Reef McInnes is going to be great as a super coach scorer, but Darcy looks promising and there'll be other rookies. I'm not even, who knows if Finlay's going to be sub again. At some stage, he's not going to be sub. He might fall in price if he's sub again and then Finlay suddenly becomes an option.
There's a chance that I don't know how low the break evens go, but if Sam Darcy has another huge score, he'll have one of the lowest break evens we've probably seen for a while. So something like that, like Tom Berry to him next week might be worth it, because it also, on top of that, frees up 80K, which might, I know that might be by Martin to get Took kind of money or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. So Lazaro's it actually looked like he was on track for a big score and then just fell off a cliff and got subbed. I traded him out last week, and if people want to trade him out, I don't think he's going to make a huge amount of money. He potentially could go if you miss
him. And Windsor too. They both don't look like they're going to make massive amounts of money.
Yeah, so they potentially could go, but they also could stay. I'm not overly fussed.
Yeah, neither here nor there. I don't think I either have massive money-making potential. I would probably grab a Carroll in that situation. Mm-hmm. I think I'd take the money. But otherwise, if you want to fix other issues, you can grab a Sam Darcy next week, most likely. Can't guarantee it because he could come out with a stinker this round. Yeah. But he does play West Coast, so feel like it should be okay. Anyway, I think one last point.
I was just going to say, on the Sam Darcy thing, something to note, I think, with Tim English as well, whether he eats into his ruck minutes more than Lobb does. I'm not sure, because Tim English throughout his whole tenure with Lobb has always been like Tim English attends 75% of the ruck contests, Lobb attends 25% is kind of their split.
Yeah, it was the same split this weekend.
Yeah, it's just potentially worth noting whether it changes anything or not. We've only got one sample size, but we'll just keep an eye on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially because Sam Darcy looked incredibly capable.
Yeah. He's so skinny, but he's so good.
He's always in good spots. I think his positioning is what impressed me. He read the ball really well. I thought he was fantastic, to be honest. I really wanted to. I saw him and I'm like, how am I getting him in my team? Because I don't have that many. I've already got like this terrible forward line of like Berry, Sexton, Karmus, Cadman, Reed. I'm like, how am I fitting him in my team next week? It's all quite a bit mad, to be honest. But I think there's an overarching sort of question that's been coming into the Slack podcast questions. And it's all of those, I guess it's twofold. One, it's, you know, how do we prioritize the rookie fix-ups versus some of these premium fix-ups versus some of these mid-pricer fix-up? Like, what's your order that you're looking at to do this week?
I probably still live by the motto that cash is king. And, like, if you don't have enough cash generation, you're not going to be able to finish your team kind of by the buyers. So I still think you really want to be prioritizing the guys that will make you a lot of money really, really quickly. And that generally is the rookies. Like a stagnant dead rookie is just such a waste, whereas there's a guy with like a negative 80 break even that's going to take off. So I'm probably still prioritizing rookies. But if some of these mid-prices have a similarly low break even or cash or money making, like talking like a D'Ambrosio, then, or in your case, you think Powell could be that as well. They could also be an option, and I'd be pretty happy with them. Like we said last week, they've got pros and cons. They score you more points on a field than a rookie, so that's good. But then they take more cash to buy than a rookie. When you could you be doing something else with that cash? I guess there's a way up. So premium fix-ups are definitely at the bottom of my list, and they're kind of more luxury at the moment, especially your guys like Dawson and Libba that you are pretty confident are going to be top 10 of their line. So, yeah, I'd probably prioritize it nearly by break even.
Yeah, that's the short, simple answer, I think, a lot of the time with this is prioritized by break even. I'm in a similar vein. I think there's, you know, Dempsey versus Massimo. Dempsey's probably going to not make as much money still, even though he's at a cheaper price, or it'd be similar. So I'd lean like Massimo over that. Powell, I guess it depends what you believe he could average, plus if he could get keeper status. I'm obviously in that sort of category, so that's where I'm looking, but wouldn't begrudge you if you didn't believe that. I think Lyons is like a much higher risk, higher reward. I don't really see the point in getting him over someone like Powell. I think I'd rather take that forward status risk in Powell. It might be a keeper versus someone like Lyons for only 50K difference. I think the other, I guess, big question, I see so many people asking about, should we take the value picks? Like, should I still be getting a Crouch type? Should I still be getting a Steel type? Should I be looking at the Wanganeen Miller, the Jordan Clark, McGovern? Or, you know, should I be getting these top-end primos? I think I know what you're going to say, but for those at the back, down the back, give a little bit of pearls of wisdom.
Well, I think this one really depends on your own play style as well and how you like to play the game and your risk appetite. I've kind of mentioned a few times in this podcast that I'm trying to get more back to guns and rookies and get some of these mid prices that aren't quite working for me. And I don't want to be bringing in more mid prices that I'm not guaranteed to be top of their line. So that's kind of where I'm sitting. And so I'm paying up, even in the fact that I'm trading in English instead of Tristan Cherry, even though Jerry will make money. But it's because I'll then have to trade him out again. I don't really want to be doing that at this point. For me, like when I start a team, maybe I'll have some of those guys, but I don't really see a point for them in my team unless I'm pretty confident they're going to be kind of there in my round 24 team. Like, I've got 35 trades left after this week if I kind of go through my current trades, and they do get eaten up a lot quicker than we think.
So, I mean, I fell in rank because I didn't have the big dogs. The ceiling really hurt. And when you're paying, I guess, cheaper, you might get a decent average across the season, which is great. But I think you do, you pay up for the big guys to get the ceiling. Yep. I'm a bit too scared of Crouch because I just don't know what Adelaide are going to do. I mean, he totally could be really good for the whole year. I'm just really scared of how they're going to mix up their midfield. So that one scares me a little. I think Steele is probably relatively safe. Like, not safe to go 110 plus, but in that 105 plus category with, you know, 110 plus upside. I feel way more scared about Wanganeen Miller and, you know, McGovern and Clark and all those guys, because they could miss the top 8, 10 by a lot of points.
Yeah.
But if I, like, after my trades this week, I'm looking at my team, admiring it, even though it's terrible, but admiring it, and I'm looking, okay, if I remove my bottom four scores from last week from my team right now, I'm removing a 63, a 65, don't forget Dacos is 54, and I'm removing Massa's 87. That's nothing to do with my team, but that's just pointing out that if you were to get someone like McGovern or Jordan Clark and they're putting out a 90, that's not really that helpful in a best 18 week. Like 95 for you know, a cheaper guy is great, but it's not really. If I were to pay 50K more and got someone who had 110 upside, that's adding value to my best 18. I'm just not getting that much if I'm picking the mid-price guys going 95 every week in the best 18 rounds. So I'd lean away from that at the moment. I don't think any of those guys in the categories is the way to play it through the best 18s. And if it wasn't best 18s, I'd probably be saying something different, to be honest. But just got to adapt to how the season's going at the moment. And I think that's the way I'm seeing it with such strong rookies and getting such good rookie scores. The mid-prices are, without a ceiling, I guess, less valuable.
No, I agree with that. I think we saw the guys that had Butters and Green and Jackson this week were the teams that scored really well, because everyone's kind of having these 60s drop off, but it's the guys going 170 that are boosting people up. And it's potentially why, you know, there's some very experienced high ranking coaches out there that kind of haven't started as well as they're used to starting, potentially because of S18, but they kind of got all of their players doing, like, generating money. So when it gets back to best 22, they might be in a good spot, kind of thing. But it's the guys that can't, it's the coaches that have the real upside players that are benefiting of best 18 at the moment, I think.
Yeah. And very last question to finish off as a personal joke, or Slack personal joke. Bill has asked a very pertinent question. He said, where does Pig sit in the rankings of the tallest podcaster? And I know the answer because I've met you a couple of times in you know, the outside world.
Yeah.
How tall are you, Pig?
193 centimeters. So I'm...
Pig might be the tallest podcaster across all the podcasts.
I don't know. Maybe.
It's not close. You were looking down on JD. But he is very tall.
He had a puffy beanie on.
He did, but you were looking down on him. And JD's tall. So it's very annoying hanging out with you and JD on the weekend because I just look so short and I'm not short.
You're not even that small.
Oh, yeah, man.
Maybe we'll do we'll need someone on Twitter to make a spreadsheet of all the height, so we'll see where we all are.
Oh, we have, without doubt, the tallest aggregate podcasters. And that... far and away. I don't think anyone would be anywhere close. But it is just funny how this has completely been a personal joke for years. And then the first person we introduce is taller than all of us. It's quite funny. It's very funny. All right. Well, thanks very much for joining me this week, Pig. I've really appreciated getting, I guess, your difference of opinion to mine and making me reconsider some of my trades this week. Not all of them, but at least some of them. Don't forget, if you have any questions, you can find myself on Twitter at pistol_DRSC. You can find Pig at pig_DRSC. You can find JB at JB_SC. And you can find Chizo at Chizo_DRSC. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.